We ask you, Heavenly Father, as we talk together tonight about the way in which we will try to answer people when they ask us questions about why they ought to believe in you, that you will give us skill as we seek to find right answers. And our Father, we pray that you'll give us not only skill in the way we answer people, but you'll fill us with love for them. And our Father, we also pray that in our working together tonight, you will help us to say things to and for each other that will be helpful for us. And we ask this for Jesus Christ's sake. Amen. You'll remember last week I drew your attention to some of the things which I said we ought to bear in mind. Oh, that is the very thing we don't want. There's nothing like being prepared, is there? Literally nothing. You'll remember I said that I thought there were four things we ought to try and bear in mind when we were giving people answers. Is the answer glorifying to God? That is it true? Secondly, does the answer answer the motivation of the questioner? And somebody kindly drew my attention to the fact that we may not ever be sure whether we've done that. We ought not to leap too quickly to conclusions about that. The third one, does it lead towards the gospel or away from the gospel? And will it be acceptable to the believer, the person? Is it believable to the person who hears it, or is it not believable? And of course, in the end, we may not be able to give an answer that is like that. I remember reading in Michael Green's book where he says one of the great ones, who is it? I forget who. Was it Justin Martyr who gives us his apologetic for the resurrection, the phoenix? And he said, do not all men know that the phoenix rises up out of its ashes every 100 years? Then why do you find it so incredible to believe in the resurrection? Well, all I can say is he knows better now. And I always thought the phoenix is such a good thing because no one ever lives long enough to see whether it does come up out of its ashes, does it? I mean, the number of people who've lived for 100 years are so few and far between. Now, I wonder if sometimes the apologetic which we use will in the years to come seem to the people who hear it to be just like that. But in the end, I take it there may well have been some people who did believe in the phoenix and therefore did not find it difficult to believe in the resurrection. I don't put it forward as the apologetic we ought to take. No, we always say what we believe to be true. We've been saying those things which we think will cause us to move towards the gospel rather than away from the gospel. We're saying those things which we believe people will in the end be able to believe. And I am constantly expecting people to believe for the reason I believe. All right? Well then, are we not going to begin with the question, how do you know God is there? Is that where we're going to begin tonight? I did say we'd start there, didn't we? And who is going to dialogue with me on that subject? Will you offer as quickly as possible so we don't waste time? Who are those who are going to dialogue with me on that point? Somebody ready to begin? I will declare the question to you when you tell me who you are. Who is going to begin? Don't waste time, quickly. Somebody is going to do it, aren't they? Yes, thank you. Derek? There you are. Would you like to have that one, please? All right. Now, the question may come in any form, but the question I'm going to ask you is this one. In the end, you cannot really prove to me that God exists, can you?
No, not in an abstract way.
Well, if you cannot prove to me that God exists, why do you ask me to believe in God?
Because it's a question of a personal relationship. And the same way I know about you, you will never venture with a big contact if you've met God.
Well, that is very difficult for me because I haven't met God.
No, but you haven't asked me how to meet God.
Oh, I see. Well, I'm not sure that was the question I wanted to ask, but is that the question I ought to ask? Let me put it to you this way then. If you cannot prove to me that God is there, why should I believe that I can enter into relationship with God if I'm not sure God is there?
Because he sent his son, Jesus Christ, on earth as a man to tell us that God was there and how he can make contact with him.
Well, why do you say there's no proof?
Because I can't produce him to today because he's no longer on earth, in a human.
I see. Then do I understand you to be saying that I can relate to Jesus as I relate to you?
Yes.
How is that possible?
Well, you've got to then listen to what I want to tell you about how you arrange this meeting. and at the moment you're far away from him, in one sense, and yet he's very close to you, if you really mean business.
So what I want to know is, he doesn't seem to be very close to me, and I'm not even sure that I believe that he's alive.
Well, that's understandable, because at the moment your eyes were in one sense shut to his existence, and your heart's in a state of rebellion against him.
And surely this argument is circular, though. You say, I'm rebelling against him, but I don't believe he's there. And if I stop rebelling against him, I'll know that he is there. And when I ask for the evidence as to why I ought to stop rebelling against him, you say that there isn't any. And I'm finding that very difficult at this moment. You see, what you're saying is, I must believe before I'll know. Are you saying that? Do I hear you correctly?
Yes, what the Maker's Handbook tells us is that taste and see that the Lord is good. Now you can therefore taste while you're alive and acknowledge, or I can acknowledge, that he is good. You can't taste after you're dead. So in a sense, yes, you've got to get to the tasting first.
Well, I find it very difficult, you see, because I can't taste until I believe, but I can't believe because I don't believe he's there. I'm sorry, I keep asking the wrong questions. I see. Well,
I'm asking you to believe that a personal relationship and a meeting, initially a meeting, is possible.
But yeah, and I know that you're saying that that is possible, and I'm saying I don't believe it is possible. Because I'm saying I don't believe God really is there. And I can't have relationship with God if I don't believe he's there. Or are you saying to me, I could actually give it a try and see if he was there?
Yes, and then I'm pressing on your mental state. Now, if you really would like to meet this person, if he's there, then a meeting can be arranged. But if you're just playing at it, no, you can't try with God.
Now, you see, you've brought me back into the circular argument again. You've said to me, if you believe God is there, you will find that God is there. If you don't believe that God is there, you will not find that God is there. And when I say, is it possible for me therefore to fellowship with God, to meet God, you say, and it won't be if you don't believe. Now I'm saying, why shouldn't I say to you, on that basis you've talked yourself into believing that God is there, and therefore you find him. You say to me, you don't believe he's there, therefore you don't find him. And I say, the reason I don't find him is because he doesn't exist. And the reason why you believe you do find him is because you want to find him. I love you, friend, I love you.
I've been in your shoes exactly a short while ago, where I didn't really want to meet God, because if I met him, I knew it would mean a fundamental change of my life. And so there is a sense in which one is saying it, what one would like to meet him. In a real deep down sense, no thank you, I hope it isn't true.
Well, I don't know that I'm in either of those positions. I haven't given it very much thought, as a matter of fact. And I'm just saying that it seems to me that there's no way through into this. That you say, I will meet God if I believe, and I'm saying I don't believe and I can't believe because there doesn't seem to me to be any reason for believing. But if I did believe, I would meet God.
I think we've got to get back to the starting point again, because to meet God, you've got to meet the man he sent to earth, Jesus Christ, who claimed to be the Son of God, sent by God. He's claimed that nothing he said was said on his own account, was said on God's behalf. And therefore, we've really got to go back to what he said. And it's on his authority alone, which we neither believe or reject what God's saying.
Are you saying that I ought to believe in God because of something Jesus said? I see. That Jesus says that God is there?
Yes.
I see. Why do you believe what Jesus says? Bertrand Russell says God isn't there.
Yes.
Why should I believe Jesus any more than Bertrand Russell?
Because Jesus was either the biggest fraud that ever walked this globe, or he is who he claimed to be, that is, the Son of God. And if you read the historical account of God, not one of his enemies could put a single word against him. He didn't leave a perfect life.
Or you mean the people who wrote about him said his enemies couldn't put anything against him?
No, because the Roman historians and Jewish historians of the time went forward his favour. In fact, would like to have written things like Jeremy Salt had a rip against him recently, couldn't find anything worth publishing.
But did they actually put their nine to it? How many Roman historians have we got evidence from do we have, what Roman historians do we have evidence on Jesus?
My knowledge, I can't answer that.
All right.
Josephus, I think I'm right saying, the Jewish historian.
Yes, he is indeed. Yes? Well, I suspect that they didn't write anything about Jesus because there wasn't anything noteworthy to write.
Well, I think that is wrong, because certainly the governors in some of the Turkish provinces certainly wrote back about this new movement that was going on. This was after his, when his people got together and started upsetting the local population.
Mm-hmm. Well, then, would you like to take a break at that stage? Now, I wonder if you'd like to make some comments about where we've gone. Let's actually map where we've gone in this journey. And I want to know, from your point of view, you have heard my questions, you have heard Derek's answers. What do you want to say to Derek that'll help him as he answers questions like I'm asking? You want to say things which will be helpful to him? Yeah, will you speak into that mic over there, please, sir?
I don't think Derek answered the original question, which was about proof. I think he jumped three or four steps in the possible discussion, and I would have thought that you could have started trying to go half a step at a time by saying, well, there's no absolute proof in scientific terms, but there's lots of sound historical evidence which is worth considering, and if you haven't considered it, it's worth looking at.
It was terribly unfair of me to jump out in that direction, wasn't it? See, I gave you the question and said, what is the existence of God? And then I rushed into another direction with the question. I realise it was like that. Yes. All right.
I think, listening to it myself, it seems to me that we've got to be terribly careful how far we go. Otherwise, we shall go around, as you said, in enormous circles.
Yes, I think so too. Let me ask you this question. Does anybody else want to say anything that they think will be helpful to know? You'll have to speak with a very loud voice or pass this mic down. Will you come and speak into this mic? Because unless you do that, we won't hear. It will be helpful. Well, you might or you mightn't just pick out, but they'll whip it down to you. It's coming, it's coming, it's coming. Yes, be patient.
Perhaps a word of just accounting something that happened in your personal life. Would help.
Oh, well, if you're going to do that, we'll have that one later. Now, we'll just stick to what you heard. We'll come back to that one in a moment. Yes, thank you for that. Thank you for that. Not what was left out, but what do you want to say about what was said?
One of the things that came to me as I was speaking, perhaps if I'm answering you, I may not have thought about it. When you said Bertrand Russell is, how do you believe Jesus, what Jesus said is right. But Bertrand Russell is dead, but Jesus Christ rose again. I might bring that point. Another point is, you said about God is, how do you know God is there? But Jesus said, when the Holy Spirit has come upon me, you shall receive power. I mean, we can find God today through Jesus.
Oh, wait a minute, that's another question. No, we're not talking about what you would have said if you'd had the go to start with. What we are saying is, what when we say to Derek about what we think about the answers he gave? Please be disciplined. Righto, put your mind to it. He wants to hear helpful comments back again. Will you pass that mic down there, please? Thank you so much.
I think I'd just say that one of the problems is that if you move back into sort of subjective experience, the other guy can always come to you and say, look, all you're offering is your experience. You're not offering anything else that will validate what you say. Mm-hmm. And that's the trap in which you fall. If you go down, I know because I know. Sort of
that's right. That's right. The great, did you hear that? The great problem about my personal experience is, let me tell you where your personal experience will take you. And I didn't quite know where to go. I had plenty of options, Derek. I was about to say to you, are you telling me that God is there because you've experienced him? I saw a young man do it one night at a meeting. And he said, oh, the bloke next door has told me that too. And the dialogue leader rushed in for the kill. And he said, there you are. And the bloke said, oh, there might be something in it after all. You've experienced God, the bloke next door's experienced God. And the dialogue leader pushed him. And he said, the bloke next door is a Buddhist. And I've never seen such a shock on a bloke's face in his life, you know. We were sort of swimming backwards. Talk about treading water, brother. I could feel myself being sucked down the plug hole like anything. That is the great problem. I believe, because I believe, because I believe. And you say, unless you believe, you won't know. Well, I don't think there's any future in that. And I think we've got to be able to move into a different direction from that.
The way the question is asked, how can you know that God really is there? I can't think of any sort of logical proof for God, and that in the last resort, it is our own experience that God is there, as we experience him through Jesus Christ. So I would have thought that there would be some place for personal experience in the answer to that question.
Well, I would wonder, when the writer of the Hebrews says, he who comes to God must believe that he is, and that he is a rewarder of those who diligently seek him, I would have thought that pre-concludes the idea of saying, leap out and see if God is not there. I would have thought the writer to the Hebrews is encouraging you not to do that. I would have thought he is saying to you, you cannot do that unless you believe God is there. And that somehow or other you must be able to get some objective evidence for a belief that to call upon God will not meet with a blank wall. And I would have thought that there maybe that could be able to be had. I wonder if somebody would like to... yes?
We never said anything about the creation of the world.
Not yet. Oh, they've got plenty of ways you can do me yet. If you want to take me along that avenue, we'll do that. Thank you for having a go, friend. Can I say, Derek, on the other point too, is that I personally find it irritating to be told that I've been asked that I've asked the wrong question. Whatever happens with the dialoguing situation, don't say to the bloke, oh, well, of course, if you'd asked the right question, I've got the right answer for the right question. Because, in actual fact, everybody thinks the questions they're asking are terribly important, even when they aren't. And what makes an important question and what doesn't make an important question? That's the one I'd like to know. So whatever happens, don't say to me, well, of course, if you only ask the right question, I've got the answer for another question. Okay? So even if you are trying to guide me to where you are, whatever you do, don't say, well, of course, if you'd ask this one, I've got the answer to that one. Would you care to ask this one? Because I won't ever. All right. Would somebody like to pick us up at the point where we were, or would you like to take a different tack altogether? I hope we have not exhausted the historical Jesus yet. Is there somebody who wants to proof me? Anybody who wants to pick me up on, can you offer me proof for the existence of God? Does somebody else want to have a go? Am I frightened? Yes, please do. Pass that mic over to that man, will you? All right, what I really want to know is, can you offer me any proof for the existence of God? You want me to believe in God? You've already spoken about God as if he is there. You've already told me that he is the ruler of the world. And I want to know, can you offer any proof for his existence?
Yes, I can. I think we can admit, can't we, that Christians do maintain that honesty is a virtue.
Ah, yes, they often say that. But I know plenty of them who don't appear to me to be honest. My own personal point of view is that they are completely deluded. I wasn't going to bring that up, but now that you've brought it up, I think they're totally deluded.
But they wouldn't be deliberately telling lies, surely?
My own personal point of view is that they cannot cope with life and that they find Christianity a great crutch to keep them going.
But on the question of deliberately telling lies, and if we look at some of the historical documents and look at them as we would contemporary authors and apply the same test to them...
I'm sorry, which historical documents?
I was thinking of the history written by a chap called Luke and also a chap called Mark.
Who?
Well, Luke was a historian who lived at the time of Jesus, and he wrote a biography of Jesus.
Was he an eyewitness?
He travelled around for a great deal with people who were, and he met people who were eyewitnesses.
He wasn't actually an eyewitness himself.
No, but Mark was.
I see. You sure of that?
Well, he said he was.
I see.
And I don't think he's got any grounds for doubting his integrity.
Why shouldn't I doubt his integrity? Why should I believe him?
Well, why should you believe what's written in the papers?
I don't most of the time.
Well, I mean, I don't think there's any answer to that if you don't believe anything.
No, I didn't say I didn't believe anything. I said I didn't believe them half of the time. Well, may I do that? Well, I believe the half I think is right.
So you're bringing your own presuppositions to it?
Yes, don't you do that? Do you believe everything you read in the paper?
No.
Well, then you bring your presuppositions too. That's what I'm saying. You believe in the end what you want to believe. That's exactly what happens with Christians all the time. They want to believe, so they do believe. There is no real evidence. That's the whole problem.
Historical evidence. Now, certainly.
What historical evidence?
Certainly, we've got the historical evidence that Christianity arose. Now, there's no disputing that.
Sure, it arose.
And it started from 12 people who were the followers of one man.
Well, do you get information for that anywhere except in the Bible?
There is quite a lot of writings from the second generation of Christians.
Second generation?
Mm-hmm.
We're now talking about how far would you like to put that dating? You mean the second century? Second century AD? I don't even believe the Bible, let alone 100 years after the Bible.
Can I ask, do you believe in the Battle of Hastings?
Well, not very much swings on that, so yes. Yes. It doesn't matter too much to me whether I do or not.
Why do you believe in the Battle of Hastings?
Well, why not?
Well, can I ask you why?
Well, because there's a little bit of evidence about it.
Well,
there's a doomsday book I understand somewhere. There are a few Norman castles around the place. There's a Norman arch in a church.
When was the doomsday book written?
I don't know, but you see, the question that you're asking me is not quite like the question I tell you the problem. What does it matter if the Battle of Hastings ever took place? It doesn't affect the way I live today. So it doesn't matter if I believe in it or not. It's an irrelevant piece of information.
Now we want to judge what criteria can we use in looking at historical documentation.
Oh, I see. Oh. Well, my great problem is that if you're saying I ought to believe in God, let me ask you, wait a minute, let me ask you this question, because I'm not sure where we're heading. Are you saying I ought to believe in God because the Bible says he is there?
No, I'm saying that you ought to believe in God because of the life of Jesus Christ.
Now,
if we just look at his life...
Excuse me, just interrupt. Could I just interrupt you for a moment? Have you actually said that in the conversation prior to this? Have you actually told me I ought to believe in God because of Jesus prior to this?
No.
No. I'm glad about that because I didn't think you had said it. I thought you were actually saying I ought to believe in God because the Bible was historical up to the present moment. But are you saying I ought to believe in God because of Jesus?
Yes.
I see. Oh, well, we can forget about history then. We'll come back to Jesus. Well, then why should I believe in God because of Jesus?
Because Jesus claimed to be God and he rose from the dead.
Let me ask you this question. If I claim to be God and rose again from the dead, would that make me God?
I think it would be worthy of my considering it, but I'm
going to
try.
Touché. Yes? All right. Now, let me hear you correctly. You're saying Jesus claims to be God and he rises again from the dead.
Yes.
Therefore, it's worth considering whether he is God.
Yes.
What criterion of judgment will I use as to whether he is or is not God?
First of all, whether or not he did actually rise from the dead.
I'll come back to that later because I doubt whether he did rise again from the dead. But let us suppose I concede to you that he did. Does that make him God? Because he rose from the dead.
No, it doesn't. But it lends support to his claims that he was.
All right. Does Lazarus rise again from the dead?
because Lazarus wasn't the prime mover.
Wait a minute, I'm sorry. Didn't Lazarus rise again from the dead, or did I hear the story incorrectly?
Lazarus did rise again from the
yes,
dead.
Yes, yes. I just want to point that out in the past. It doesn't lend any support to the idea that he is, though. I just point that out in passing.
No.
All right,
Jesus called Lazarus out from the tomb to rise from the dead. Rather than weakening my case, I should say that story actually strengthens my case.
I can't actually see how it does, but I won't press it.
Well, who else but God can bring life back to the dead?
I don't know. You see, that is on a presupposition that God is there. I'm saying I don't know if he did come back to life again from the dead. You will obviously interpret that as the God thing, because it lends weight to what you want to say. But I'm saying he may have risen again from the dead. I doubt the validity of the documents. That is my basic problem. But what I don't really understand is, do you have any other evidence in the person of Jesus then? You're saying, I ought to look at Jesus, and he rose from the dead. Now, you say it lends weight, and I'm saying, what else lends weight to the idea that Jesus is God?
The claims down through the centuries of people who generally did not lie, who claimed to have experienced him, also...
You can't have that, old pal. You can't say, the people who agree with me generally don't lie, and the people who agree with you generally do. You won't mind me saying that. That seems really a bit rough. You mean the people who wrote the documents believed that Jesus was God? Is that what you're saying?
The documents which we find incorporated into the Bible, yes.
Yes, the histories about him. The Luke, Mark, Matthew, John histories.
But it's two steps there. First of all, are they histories? Secondly, are they scripture?
Look, if you don't mind me saying at this stage, I wouldn't ever put into the mouth of an unbeliever the problems which you don't want to actually bring up. Bad enough if he brings them up, pal. Bad enough for you if he brings them up. Don't tell him where the problems lie, for goodness sake. No, I don't want to paddle around there. I'm not going to let you paddle in your pond. We're going to paddle in mine. Let me ask you now again, am I getting you correctly? You're saying I ought to believe in God because of Jesus.
Yes.
That right?
Yes.
Because Jesus claims to be God. And I'm saying, why should I believe that claim? And you've told me because he rose from the dead. And I'm saying that is extraordinary.
Yes.
So extraordinary that I don't believe it. But is there any other evidence you'd like to give me about Jesus?
He did numerous miracles.
Right. Anything else?
So
what the miracles and the resurrection are enough to convince me?
I think the resurrection ought to be.
Now, I'm saying, you're now saying if a man rises again from the dead, he's God.
No.
I see. Well, then I must have missed a step somewhere. If he does miracles and rises again from the dead, he's God.
If he claims to be God, if he forecasts that he will die, and also gives a timetable when he will rise from the dead, then this lends considerable support to his claim.
All right, thank you. I wonder if you'd like to make some comments now, would you? You see, we've actually tried to sharpen a wee bit... This man, please tell me your name again, will you? John. John has actually been trying to sharpen onto the historical Jesus, hasn't he? Okay? Now, what do you want to say about that? Pass the mic down there. Will you move over to the mic, please? It's helpful. Where is that mic? Wave it round like a flag on Empire Day, will you? Look, can I just say at the present moment, it's tedious listening to people. Do you find it tedious listening as the argument goes on? No, right. Keep concentrating all the time and ask yourself, what would I be saying now, and how did he get where he is now? What did he say that got him into that position? I mean, you might think he's in a good position. And if you do, well, you can see where he got there. And you say, boy, that's where I want to go.
Just really, the fulfillment of the prophecies of the Old Testament.
You would have thought that was a helpful thing to have added?
Oh, yes.
Yes. Yes, I think it's worth saying, will you, that Jesus just doesn't come out of the blue into the scene, but he comes against the background of certain things which God has said. Well, I don't know that I'd actually quote those to people, but I don't know that I would necessarily say Jesus fulfills certain prophecies. Because, you know, what is the great risk about saying that? What is the risk about that? Well, first of all, they don't know the prophecies. And they say, oh, well, tell me what the prophecies are. And then they'll say to you, unless I'm greatly mistaken, well, but other people think these have been fulfilled in other ways. I would have thought that was an area that I'd give a lot of thought to before I'd move into. Now, what else do we want to say about to this man that's a helpful thing?
I think you ought to have tackled it along the line of it.
No. You mean me or him? Oh, no, you can have a go later. What we want to do is say something about his way.
Well, I would have mentioned the fact that people with the beds that have been crucified have goatskins, lions and tigers, rather than in died that Christ didn't raise from the dead.
I see.
Paul said that there were nearly 500 still alive.
Okay. What we're actually saying to him then is that people were thoroughly convinced that Jesus rose from the dead. Yeah, we're prepared to die for the fact that they claimed they'd seen Jesus alive. Now, is that factual?
Yes.
You sure of that?
Yes.
Sounds good. Sounds good.
I think it was the lordship that they died for.
Yeah, I thought that they would have died for the fact that they believed that what they were dying for was right. Do we really have evidence that people laid down their life for the fact that they had seen Jesus alive from the dead? Do we actually have that evidence? I mean, I'm not disputing it. I'm saying if you can give it to me, I think it's very helpful to have.
The Roman emperors wanted people to deny that Christ was not God.
Oh, yeah, they wanted that. But did those people who actually died, had they actually seen Jesus alive from the dead?
Yes.
Had they? Yes. Yeah, well, Stephen did. But, yeah, Stephen did.
Peter, John.
I see.
James.
And you actually... No, James didn't for that purpose, did he? James didn't for that purpose. We don't know why James was put to the sword. Was James put to the sword on the historicity of the resurrection? He was put to the sword because he was a Christian. Wasn't he?
Surely,
are they the same things?
Surely, well, Christianity begins and really revolves around the fact that Christ came back from the dead. If you don't want to dwell on that point, you may as well not bother having your faith. Because if Christ didn't bother coming back from the dead, he might...
Oh, no, don't argue with me now. We're saying... So you gave me another piece of evidence, and I'm saying if you want to use that, I want to be sure it's truthful. It's very powerful evidence, that one, I think. And I'd like to thump it along. If that's actually factual, I'm just trying to... No, he was a Jew. Yeah. Are you sure that Josephus says that? I would have thought that all Josephus tells us, he tells us something about Jesus, doesn't he? And that people believed that he had risen again from the dead. I don't think Josephus says any more than that. But look, I'm no authority on Josephus. No. No, it's terribly different to say people died because they thought Jesus had come back to life from the dead. And Josephus says the Christians claimed that Jesus came back to life from the dead. I think that's a good piece of evidence.
Yes, but he wouldn't write that, surely. I mean, he was unbiased. He wasn't writing it to support him. He was a Jew.
Yeah, that's...
He wanted to deny that Jesus probably wasn't.
Yeah.
So the fact that he wrote it to say, they claimed him as an independent witness, unbiased, gives strong supporting evidence to the fact that he did write it.
No, it just says that Josephus noted that Christians claim that Jesus rose from the dead.
What would be the point of reporting that?
Because he was a historian and he believed that Christians did believe that Jesus rose from the dead. I think it is a piece of evidence which is helpful. But we mustn't say any more than the evidence says. Because someday you'll meet somebody who's read Josephus. That's the problem. Here's the people here who've read him. Here's a man who's read him. Here's a man who's read him. Anybody else read him? Right, you see, they have read him. And they will know how little he has said about the resurrection. I have read the passage in F.F. Bruce. And I tell you, I soft-pedaled on Josephus faster than anything else after I'd read that bit. I realised how much I had.
Isn't the point, the positive point you take from this, in that the early Christians were saying that Jesus was as real to them as Caesar was real to others? And this is what the people saw, that the Christians were claiming that Christ was the Lord, and Romans were claiming Caesar was Lord, and for that they were prepared to die.
Yes, you can do another line of argument on that one, and I think that's a powerful line of argument. You can say these people were thoroughly convinced that Jesus was Lord, and then we'll have to work backwards and say, what was it that caused them to be convinced? Where did they get this conviction from? I think it can be done. But I think we cannot say, simply because a man dies, we mustn't say they died because they saw Jesus alive from the dead, unless we know that they did actually die for that reason, in case somebody called your bluff. And because we oughtn't to say it unless it's true. I'm really asking, is it true?
Well, at the time that Paul wrote, he wrote 500 people were still alive.
Ah, sure. That's the... Yeah, brother, and that's what we must say then. See, don't jack it up any further than that. Just say that. Say, when Paul writes to the Corinthians, he is calling on them to note the fact that 500 people, which is a vast sum of witnesses, saw Jesus alive, and the greater bulk of them were alive at the time of the writing, and he calls on people to recognize it. I think that's very powerful. Don't jack it up one step further. Yes, pass the mic over, will you please? The problem you were having with me? I am sorry about that.
The problem that I was having was how do I establish the accuracy and the historicity of the documents of someone that is just going to be big-headed and say, well, I won't believe that?
Yes, that's a good question. We'll have that next week. Because we will talk about how we go about establishing historicity of those documents. Is that possible? I just say in passing, it was interesting to me last night at a meeting where somebody told me they could not possibly believe in the historicity of anything that was written. I simply said, do you believe Jeremy Thorpe has resigned as leader of the Liberal Party? She said, yes. I said, on what evidence? She said, I read it in the paper. I said, I see. It's a bit stunning, isn't it? I said, I see. But you can't get any history that's accurate from the past. It just seems to me inconceivable. But we will deal with the New Testament documents.
I mean, as long as you maintain that position, I found it very difficult to go on.
Yes. I think if you're going to tackle the historical Jesus, it's inevitable for us to get to the historicity of the documents, isn't it? It's absolutely inevitable. Can any of you think that you will not end up at that position? If you take the historical Jesus, we will end at the historicity of the documents, won't we? Right. Well then, let me say that if you're going to deal with the historical Jesus, we know that it will end with the New Testament documents. A doc, because I can't remember how to spell it. Now, I got a psych essay back in third year. Did I tell you about it? My dear Chapman, your spelling has ceased to be a weakness. It has become a failure. Very depressing, isn't it? If you take on the historical Jesus, you cannot help but end with the New Testament documents. So I'm saying, if you wish to use as the evidence, as the objective evidence, the person of Jesus, then I think you must be ready to make a defence for the historicity of the documents. It seems to me inevitable that you'll go there, and if you don't go in that direction, I think you'll have struck oil. But I think, too, that I would like some sharper reasons as to why I ought to believe that Jesus is God than that he rose again from the dead. Is that a logical leap? Does anybody else find that unconvincing besides me? Now, what is it that we ought to be doing in this situation, then? Janet, will you whiz the mic over to... Somebody whiz the mic over to Janet, please. Janet, will you get up and rise up and come to the mic? This is your big moment, Janet.
Having stuck my neck in the block, I'm not quite sure why claims of Christ, what we now say according to the character of Christ.
All right, now where is it that we do the reading to sharpen up on this? Where do you find that the argument is put out before you on the historical Jesus? Where have you read it that you found it helpful? Any of you read anywhere where it's helpful so we can sharpen up in our reading?
Stott's Basic Christianity.
Yes, isn't this the line John Stott takes in his Basic Christianity? Do you know that line? That is the line John takes in his Basic Christianity, isn't it? And I would say if you're going to use that line, you must get those early chapters under your belt. If you intend to argue for the existence of God from the historical Jesus, I want more than that he rose again from the dead. Okay? I think that's an excellent beginning. And I think you ought to press me into some of the alternatives for this man Jesus. And let me say at the present moment, there's enough goodwill around to do it. At least in our part of the world. There's enough goodwill around on the person of Jesus, people still think he was a fairly good person. And I want to drive them to see that if he's not God, he's not good. You can't have your cake and eat it too. What is he if he's not God? He's conning that rich young ruler into believing he'll go to heaven if he gives his money away to the poor and he's going to snuff it out quick and clean and go down the plug hole. He's not good. Or else the other alternative, which is very distasteful. Now, I think you ought to somehow or other work in the alternatives to that. And that will undoubtedly get you there. I want also at this stage to ask you, because I want to move into some of the other areas on the existence of God too, to see where they'll lead us. But don't you want to ask something about proof and proof? See, twice I asked, will you give me proof for the existence of God? And you said, yes, you would give me proof. And I want to know, what is the nature of the proof that you're giving me? Because the fact that you can prove to me that God is there is not quite like the proof you can offer me for this table, is it? Or is it? Is it? Let me ask you then, is it the sort of proof that you can offer for my wife loves me? Well, I'm sorry. No, I'll ask, I'm sorry. I don't have a wife. I don't have one. What am I saying? It's that squash with Wilco. It's done for me. It's absolutely done for me. I'm raffled. I'm saying, see, I say to you, here is a man who says, my wife loves me. Now, in the end, how does he arrive at that conclusion? He says, the evidence which is available does not allow me an alternative. Now, I'm saying it's that sort of evidence I can offer you, which is different from the fact that there is a chair. I think it's different. Although I know very little about philosophy, but people tell me it's very difficult to prove that I am here. But I have a distinct impression that I am. And I have a very distinct impression that you are there. And so distinct is the impression that I think we're relating to each other. And so I say to people, I do understand the difficulties of proving that we exist, but we do not doubt that as reality. And this man does not doubt the reality that his wife loves him. Although the sort of evidence he can marshal for it is different from the evidence you can marshal that that is a table. Now, I think that's worth pointing out, isn't it? That we are saying to people, we believe in the end that the sort of evidence we can give you will push you in the direction and will leave you beyond reasonable doubt. You may not think that's worth saying, but I wonder if it isn't. Pass the mic down there. Who's got the mic? You still got the mic, Janet? What are you doing with it? Thank you. Oh, I am sorry about that. Pass that down to that man there. Yeah, so thanks, Derek, very much indeed. Yes.
On this subject, I found that it's helpful to try and point out the limitations of the scientific method. In fact, I thought in both cases they really didn't get at the question you were bringing up about the nature of proof.
Mm-hmm.
Which the easiest way I found to discuss that is to point out the difference between the scientific method of arriving at proof and the legal method.
Yes. Yes. Do you want to say something about that briefly for us?
You've mentioned love. One,
yes.
One illustration that I've found effective is to point out that scientists tend to affirm as true what they can prove in a laboratory.
Yes.
Repeatable experiments.
What we're really saying, this is not very appropriate for that method, aren't we?
Yes. And I think in the early stages, rather than attempt to always respond to your questions, but using questions as answers might have helped to identify the issue more clearly. In other words, if you're really concerned about the answer, we can talk about that.
Yes. I would have been happier in the early stages if we'd tried to define what question I was asking. I think that would have been helpful all round. I generally respond when people say, you cannot prove it in the long run, can you? I generally say, I think I've really got very good evidence. Because I don't think you can believe something without evidence. And I'll move it that way. And I simply say, the sort of evidence I can give you is the sort of evidence a man will put forward for saying, I love my wife. Or, I know my wife loves me.
It might have been helpful also if by questioning you back, they could have determined or at least tried to get you to state what your worldview is.
Yes.
What do you believe?
Yes, that mightn't have been bad. Boy, I don't know what I'd have done then. All right, thank you. Before we leave the historical Jesus, does anybody want to say anything that will be helpful to us?
You mentioned the scientific method of proof, and you referred to a method of collecting data and then forming your hypothesis, an inductive method, that is. And this is no longer held as a valid method, since I can observe n million swans and still not prove that all swans are white.
I see. Thank you.
I just mentioned that in the...
Thank you for that helpful word, friend. I feel as if suddenly the plugged water is running out rapidly. What do you suggest I do then?
Well, not wade in that way.
Yeah, thank you. you won't mind me saying that, but I've got that message. What I'm saying is, now I know how not to swim, please tell me how to swim. I actually thought that's what you were asking me to do on the person of Jesus, weren't you? Didn't you? I thought I heard you present me with a hypothesis.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Wasn't that what I said that I thought Stott was doing also?
Yes. Sorry, I wasn't coming back.
Yes, right, fine. Yes. I'll tell you what I find. I normally don't try and establish the scientific method because I find that this in this great age, especially with people who are scientists or who think the scientific... I'm sorry, the people who aren't scientists but who think the scientific method is marvellous, when they hear Christians saying, of course, the scientific method is inappropriate, they say, well, of course, he's an idiot. Of course, the whole world knows that science is right. And I've always really believed that Christian people were against science. And he is saying these against science. So I never say anything about it, but mainly because I know very little about it. But I would say, how will we go about establishing what sort of proof is available? What do you mean by that? I think that's not a bad idea. I find it helpful not to introduce the word scientific. Because I think people will hear us saying, I know we aren't saying it, I think they might hear us saying, you are against science. I think that'd be worth thinking about. I remember I had a group of sixth formers at Sydney High. I made the fatal error of saying something about the limitations of the scientific method and the scientific view of truth. Well, I tell you, it was like throwing a brick into a fowl house at night. Everyone squawked at once. And by the time they all settled down, I said, look, I'm not against science. I'm a child of the scientific age. I love everything. I love the moon rocket. I love everything. They heard nothing else. Nothing else for months and months. And in desperation, I said, I have got a friend who is a scientist. My friend who is a scientist is a Christian. I will bring my friend who is a scientist and who is a Christian so he will answer your scientific questions. I am so sorry, I do not understand them. But I can do it. So I lug my friend Hawkes, who is the virologist number one of Australia. I lug him out from New South Wales University. I put him in front of my sixth form. I said, he is here. He is a scientist. His credentials are good. He is a Christian. Tell us, Royal, you are a Christian. He gives a very simple word of testimony. And I say, thank you so much. Please ask your questions now, fellas. Well, mine left open too. I said, speak! This man is being paid at high rates. Speak! I said, please, 6B, say something, I can't bear it. So one child said, Dr. Hawkes, do you find it difficult being a Christian and being a scientist? And he said, no. Where would you think I would have problems? In which area? And I realised that the problems we were having before were prejudicial. What they had heard me saying was something quite different to what I'd said. And I think it is an area which I have learned not to identify. Because I think people hear me saying, science leads you away from God. And I'm only saying that I think, you know, that that might be a danger point. And I'm not saying that we oughtn't to know about it. And I'm not saying that we oughtn't to use our description without actually using the word. I think it's as emotive as hell in a different direction. I must remind me to tell you about hell. I've used it twice in the last 3 days with both effects on both occasions. It was like the brick in the fowl house at night on that one. Can I ask if somebody else would like to take us along on any other line on the existence of God than the historical Jesus? Like to do that? Have you got the mic? Pass it over to him. I'm sorry, behind you. Did somebody over here indicate they wanted to? Oh, we'll come back over there in a jiffy then. Go over there, right behind you. Then on the historical Jesus.
Yes, I want to go back
to yes,
you.
Yes, come back then.
Question.
Yes.
You want to know that in the end, when we prove that God is there.
Yes.
And I'm asking you the question back, do you mean in the scientific sense, I can't think of a way to put that. Use another word. Do you mean in the sense that scientists say things are true?
No, I just mean, is he there? Anyway, is he there? So you say he is there, I'm saying he isn't there.
All right, let me see how you respond to this. It seems to me that because we exist, we have a problem in explaining our existence. How did we get here?
No, well, that doesn't seem to me to be a problem. I don't ever ask it. I'm just here. You're there, I'm here, but God isn't. You I can see, me I can see, God I can't see.
All right, let's talk about from the standpoint of cause and effect. We do exist, we are here, we are human beings, we
yeah.
seem to be different than the animals.
I don't know that I think that, but go on.
Well, if I take my wristwatch off, my mind says here is a wristwatch, there must have been a designer of the watch.
Uh-huh.
It didn't just happen.
Right.
So we look at the world. We look at nature, we look at the existence of human beings, and we say there must have been a designer, there must have been a first cause.
Ah, well, the great problem about the first cause is, who is saying what is the first cause and what is the first effect? See, why do you say that this is the effect? Why can't I equally say this is the first cause, from which everything else is an effect?
Let me ask you what you believe concerning mankind as opposed to the animal world and the world of nature. Do you believe we're different, or do you believe we're just a higher form of animal?
I don't know that I've put my mind to it. That's what I always say when I'm stalling for time. Are you asking me to put my mind to it right now? I don't know. No, I never make quick decisions like that.
So you're not holding a position that you're not necessarily different.
No, I don't know. I just think I'm a bit more intelligent than the cat, although sometimes I'm not even sure about that. Yeah, all right, let's suppose I'm different from the animals.
Have you thought about, do you believe that when you die, when man dies, that that's just the end? Or have you thought about, do you believe there's anything spiritual about man at all?
No. I do not believe that God is there, and I do not believe in life after death, and I believe that when it all comes to an end, it comes to an end. And I can't see any reason for believing any otherwise.
existence of the world, the existence of mankind. He promised to explain how and why and where. I don't like it. I don't want to think that this is all there is. And I think that God has revealed himself basically in three ways. I think he's revealed himself in nature. You don't have to teach a child to say, Daddy, who made the mountains?
You sure have to teach me. You have to teach me. You may have to teach a child. But you see, I actually think you've arrived at where you are because you do want to believe in life after death.
Do you think that the universe as we know it happened by accident?
I don't know how it happened. But I don't think it necessitates having someone to make it. Because if it necessitates having somebody to make it, who made the person who made it?
All right, there are two questions. Let me deal with the first one. I agree with you that it doesn't necessitate somebody make it. I simply say that when I look at nature, it's not chaotic.
Well, I would have thought if you looked in Italy at the present moment, you might have thought it was.
Generally speaking, you would agree with me, though, that nature is not chaotic.
No, I do not agree. I do not generally agree with you at that point. I do not generally agree with you at that point. I find it's disturbing.
Oh, have you explained that summer follows spring and fall follows summer and the clouds keep coming back?
Well, I must ask you this question. How do you explain the fact that droughts come and the monsoons do not come in time and you have gigantic tracts of India dying of starvation?
I didn't say that we're like a clock that ticks away with no exceptions. What I said was that when we look at nature, it is not on the whole chaotic. It makes sense.
Well, I'm saying it depends which hole you look at.
All right. Let me just get back to the first question that you brought up. If I look at the world, if I look at the earth, and if I look at just nature for a moment, and it seems to me that there must have been a designer.
Yes, I'm hearing you saying that, but I'm disagreeing with you. But go on. I'm saying I don't think it necessarily means that somebody designed it. I think it's possible that it could have come through its selective periods and so finally in the end, what couldn't survive didn't survive, it just dropped out.
You would agree, though, that it does point to some kind of process, some kind of system, some kind of...
Yes. Yes. No. System, but not first cause. System, in my judgment, does not necessitate first cause. Because something happens along, that is, if the strong live and the weak die out, I'm saying that doesn't seem to me to necessitate a first cause. Not of itself.
You bring up the question of evolutionary process.
Yeah.
Let me go back and deal with, if I might, another question that you brought up earlier. In fact, if you'll allow me, let me just finish the statement I started to make, that I think God has revealed himself basically in three ways. Through nature, through the historical person Jesus, then through the Bible.
All right. Now, will you deal with the history? Will you?
I look at all this together and I say, here's a body of evidence. Now go back to the original point about proof. I ask myself, what are the alternatives? In fact, let's go all the way to the beginning in the evolutionary process and talk about it.
I think I'll have to interrupt you at the present moment, and I want to interrupt you for several reasons. That I really think, by and large, that most people who come to a dialogue meeting will not listen to me for any longer than about four or five sentences at a time. I think they don't listen. And therefore, I don't think we've got the opportunity to make long speeches. So, whatever happens, you have got to prompt me to ask questions which allow me to come back in again. And I think in the end, in dialogue work, you will have to correct me here, there's a certain risk you run in the way you give your answer that you may not actually be able to get back to where you wished you were heading. But it's a risk you run, and I think it's one of the things that as we're doing dialogue work, we need to keep praying about. Because at any given moment, as you make the selection of what you'll say, the way I respond to that, in a sense, gives you the opportunity, or you've lost the opportunity, to follow that along. And now, I want to ask you how you respond to what I've just said now. I think by and large, one of the things that worried me today, I noticed that John's not here. I was going to ask him to make a comment. But I spoke at a meeting for John Brown at lunchtime today, and I sensed that the answers I was giving were all just a bit too long. I really needed to be much more succinct and punchy. And you know that sort of feeling you come away, you can kick yourself. You say, if you ought to be sharp and punchy, pal, you don't have to preach a little sermon each time. And I think we don't have enough time. And we'd love to be able to give a sermon. But the thing is, it's got to be clear in our mind, and the dialogue leader will tend to move us out in certain directions. Do you agree with me on that, those of you who've been listening? We need to give some feedback. What is your name, brother, please?
Carol.
We need to give some feedback over there. Do you feel like that? Yeah, and so there's a sense, brother, in which we've got to run the risk. Say a little bit, see where it takes us. Say a little bit, see where it takes us. Where does the creation lead you? The arguments from creation lead you to evolution or the problem of evil, won't they? So will we not go creation, evolution, or, and will we not go to Genesis 3 and the Bible? Maybe, if they know enough about it. Or it will take you to the problem of evil, won't it? And I wasn't sure which way I ought to respond. But once you tell me how beautiful the world is ordered, I will tell you of the many people I know who've got deformed children, and we will move into the area of the problem of evil, and that is where creation goes. Can I just tell you in my own estimation on this, and you may just like to know about it. The strange point about it is that anybody who is older than I am, by and large, still believes that God created the world. And I've hardly ever met anybody younger than I am who is not a Christian who does. Now, I'm only saying that to you because I think somewhere along the whole movement, a great shift in our believing took place there. And I notice in a dialogue meeting that my mother had with all her oldies, that she is 86, they weren't all quite as ancient as that. One dear old soul said to me, "Why do you basically believe in God?" And I said, "Who do you think made the world?" And she said, "Of course, that's the reason, isn't it?" And that was the nicest night I'd ever had. I had all I could do not to rush up and shake her warmly by the hand. I thought, you dear old soul. And I remember hearing at a meeting a Christian lady said, with all seriousness, she said, "All I do is look at a daffodil and I say, how could that happen without God?" And I looked round the room and blow me if 90% of the old blokes didn't go. Now, I believe God did create the world, and if they believe in God because of the creation, bully for them. Don't say, "Well, there are lots of problems associated with believing in God because of the creation." Have you ever thought about all the daffodils that don't come out properly? You see? Now, I only say that to you because I actually think at Sydney University, I wouldn't waste my time trying to move along on the basis of creation. Really, you're in for more problems than it's worth, in my judgment. Although if somebody comes out of the blue and says to me, "Do you believe in God because of the world?" I say, "Too right." And the reason I believe God created the world is the order of belief you've got to have not to believe it is greater than the one I've got. And the order of belief is that it just happened out of the blue is the same order of belief of believing you'd shot a bomb into a printing work and it'd start printing the Lord's Prayer backwards. It is possible, but it's unlikely. And that isn't the order of belief I have. And I just don't want them to think that that the creation idea is for gullible twits. See, if you have a non-creation idea, the order of belief is much higher. It doesn't make it right or wrong because it's harder to believe. I think they think we believe in creation because we're nuts and it's easy to believe. But I'm saying, if you work on a mutation theory, somewhere way back, what you are believing is very big order of belief. It neither makes it right or wrong because of that. But it mightn't be a bad idea to know it. I think we ought to take a break for tea. Anybody, you want anything to say that they're actually busting to say it before we go to tea?
Just one comment on the last start.
Yes, Derek, would you have a talk into the mic? Where is the mic? Who is hatching it? Nothing comes from that, let me tell you. One mic will be there in the end.
Just one lesson the Lord taught Nicodemus when he was saying, I can't see, and he was saying, well, I can't see, I can't see. Yes, you can't see the wind.
Yes.
You know, the useful thing to
that. I think that we believe in many things that we don't see. I think that's worth saying. I think that there are lots of realities which are not seeing realities. Sure, I think that's helpful. All right, now I just want to give you a few instructions about eating tonight. We never do the same thing twice. Just when you think you know which table to head to, you don't. Now, where did the A's to where do we go? A's to M, A's to M-A-U-G-H-A-M. Is that correct? Where do you think you're going? Surprise, surprise, over there. All right. And the rest of the M's to the rest of the wherevers, over to there. Okay? And I think there are one or two things we ought to do about the existence of God when we come back again. And then we'll go on to the other questions, which I don't think are quite so hard. Have some tea and have a break.